Hello and welcome again to another episode in Season 5 of Naturally Educated. My name's Tim Elliott and with me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Abdulrahman Al-Zabi. How you doing?
Tim, not at all bad. Thanks for asking. All is well. Thank you. And it's good to be back.
It's good to see you.
Thank you very much. So here we are right at the middle point of Season 5 of Naturally Educated, Tim.
You know what? Time flies. We're racking up the miles now, Abdulrahman.
We are. And we're getting there, Tim. A quick recap before we get into today's episode. This season, we are all about the role of biodiversity, technology, and sustainable practices in restoring degraded ecosystems.
Correct. That's kind of the overall theme. And this time, in this episode, it's a look into the future. So, crystal ball gazing, however you want to term it. It's a green vision for tomorrow's ecosystem.
Absolutely. We'll be asking our guests, yes, guests, plural today, what a green vision for tomorrow's ecosystems means.
It's another discussion with some really big ideas, Abdulrahman. But really what this boils down to is what's happening and what we're doing now to ensure tomorrow.
Exactly. In other words, what might the future in ecosystem restoration terms look like, Tim, right?
That's exactly it. We'll also be explaining the UAE vision for tomorrow's ecosystem, which is kind of driven by, it's a vision driven by sustainable practices, but also technological innovation. We are in the tech age.
Exactly. Also a cultural shift to ecological stewardship, which is us doing better and doing our best for natural ecosystem that we inhabit, whether it's an aquatic ecosystem, freshwater, like lakes, rivers, wetlands, and marine ecosystems. And by that, I mean oceans, coral reefs, etc.
Or even terrestrial, I guess, as well. So forests, grasslands, deserts, tundra as also.
Plus, we'll even include artificial ecosystems. In other words, human-made ecosystems, something like agricultural lands, urban areas, and reservoirs.
It's a good point. What we're really concerned with is supporting the nature that we have wherever we have that nature. So renewing, restoring, and maintaining all the good stuff that we've got for future generations. So Abdulrahman, let's get to it.
Right then, our guests today are both from EAD, Abu Dhabi's Environment Agency. Dr. Hind Al-Amri is the Acting Section Head for Marine Biodiversity Assessment and Conservation, and Wael Suleiman, who is a Specialist in Environmental Policies and Regulations at EAD. Dr. Hind, welcome to Naturally Educated. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Wael, it's also great to have you with us.
Thank you, Abdulrahman. Thanks.
So I would like to start off this podcast asking both of you, foundational question, let's say. I would like to know more about who you are, your expertise, your studies, and give us a little bit of a focus on your work at EAD and your current specialization. So I would like to start with Dr. Hind. Please give us a background about yourself.
To start, I have been with the Environment Agency since 2014. And my background originally is in environmental science, and then I pursued higher education in biodiversity and conservation, as well as biological sciences. I've been with the same team, luckily, because the projects to me just are, it's basically what I'm really passionate about, as well as them being very exciting because we get to learn everything every day. Our work focuses on assessing our marine biodiversity, specifically the ones that we consider vulnerable or threatened, such as our sea turtles, dolphins, and dugongs, and the habitats that are associated with them. So we're talking about seagrass, corals, and mangroves. So basically, our work starts in the field, and that's where we can gather all the scientific data that we need. And then it moves on to us assessing the current status, the threats, and then translating all of that scientific information to actual plans and measures that we need to do to just ensure that these habitats and species thrive in our ecosystems. That's basically what we do in a nutshell.
Brilliant. Wael?
Yeah, thanks, Abdulrahman. I joined EAD in 2015, so I've been working like for 10 years in the field of developing policies, regulations in different environmental fields. I have a master's degree in water and environmental engineering with a BS in civil engineering. Based on the data that our colleagues in different sectors of EAD gather, collect, as Dr. Hind just mentioned, we usually develop our policies, regulations, data-driven, science-driven policies, regulations, as I mentioned, in different environmental fields, biodiversity, groundwater, marine water, air quality, soil, and other environmental fields.
Guys, it's a pleasure to have you both here. Thank you for joining us. If I can jump straight into the main kind of theme of our discussion today, and if I can begin with you, Dr. Hind, it really is an extremely broad question. We're midpoint in the season, and we're trying to bring out it's a green vision for tomorrow's ecosystem. And I wanted to start really with your thoughts as an overview. What comes to mind when you hear that sentence?
When we talk about the green vision or tomorrow's ecosystem, it's not just about biodiversity or water quality. It's everything together. And it's what we do today that will impact what will happen in the future. And that's what drives us to collect the data that we're collecting now. And to analyze and to assess, and like Wael mentioned, to develop these regulations and policies, is because we want to ensure this continues to future generations. So I can go on and on about the green vision, but I must say that it didn't start recently. This started even before the UAE was formed, with the late Sheikh Zayed, where he had this vision to ensure the conservation and protection and also thriving economy for the UAE as a whole.
And Wael, what about you? What would you add to this?
As you may know, the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi is the competent authority responsible for implementing federal environmental laws and regulations, and also developing local policies and regulations on Abu Dhabi level, and also implementing these policies and regulations. So EAD actually, let's say, have these authorities based on two main regulatory frameworks or laws. The well-known law of the federal level, law number 24 of the year 1999 for the protection and development of the environment. And this is where the Ministry of Climate Change and Environment, together with local authorities in the Emirates, including the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi in Abu Dhabi Emirate, tries to, let's say, come up with regulatory frameworks and programs, initiatives to protect the environment in general. So this is one. The other one actually is what we call the law number 16 of 2005. And this is where EAD was re-established as the Environmental Agency Abu Dhabi, that tackles all environmental programs, aspects, themes in the Emirate. And this is where EAD is considered as a regulatory authority, actually, developing such regulatory frameworks and working through different initiatives, programs to conserve, protect different elements of the environment.
Let's get into some more details, some more specifics. And Dr. Hind, if you could talk us through what the UAE envisions for tomorrow's ecosystem. It's a vision, from what I read, driven by sustainable practices, tech innovation. There really needs to be a cultural shift to ecological stewardship. So what we've seen in recent years is the UAE really building on the fundamentals, the baseline assessments, and you've referred to that already. Here in the Emirates, marine ecosystems are biodiversity hotspots. Let's use that as a phrase, because it really is true. Efforts to conserve them require innovation in terms of ideas, in terms of approaches. So to paraphrase you, what's happening now to ensure tomorrow is the key, isn't it? Let me ask you for more on how you view the future, how you see these things coming into effect.
Okay, so if we talk about the UAE, where it is, and in terms of the environment, we are already considered one of the most challenging environmental areas due to the high temperatures that we have, due to the high salinity that's there in our waters. So we're already seeing that our area is facing a lot of environmental pressures. But regardless of that, our species and habitats are still thriving and are able to come back, especially after the summer. When we survey our corals and seagrass, we can see them coming back after, for example, a bleaching event and so on. So we consider it as a challenging area. We try to understand how and why the species and habitats are thriving. As we've mentioned, we've done baseline assessments. We've done, and we have these assessments ongoing for many years. I mean, the earliest goes back to the year 2000, since the initiation of the Environment Agency. But what I see as the future, as you mentioned, AI and technology, and I think what we are moving towards is actually trying to figure out what might happen early on for us to be able to put the mitigation measures and all these policies or protection measures such as protected areas or restoration projects in place now so we can avoid that in the future. So there are a few projects that we've started in terms of mapping and understanding how, for example, mangroves have been before and how they are now and what's been impacting them. And this is all done through technological advances as well as AI. As I mentioned, moving ahead, that's one area I think we are heavily focusing on. Another one is what you mentioned briefly is the I'd say, cultural shift or the citizens being part of the solution or part of us understanding what's happening. And that's something we've started as well, where we've included citizen science programs, volunteers being part of not just as important as it is, such as bleach cleanups and so on, but they're now more active in monitoring some of our habitats, in monitoring some of our species at certain seasons. So they are part of the solution because I believe, and I've seen it firsthand, when a member of the community is actually involved in these and they can see what impact they have a stronger reason to protect it and conserve it and even spread the word. So those are the two key pillars, I would say, moving ahead. And how I see our environment sustaining our ecosystems.
And, you know, adding to that, the fact that you can also include some policy framework around that kind of advancement is necessary. And here I want to kind of pivot to Wael. As you mentioned, you know, EAD is sort of the regulatory body that puts these regulations in place to ensure the success of these programs and more. So let's discuss your particular areas of expertise. Part of it is restoring marine ecosystems. Over the years, we've spoken in this podcast about the importance of the UAE's marine environment, the marine history, and that legacy of the culture and the UAE as a country. So let me ask you directly, what's happening to help restore and protect marine ecosystems in Abu Dhabi?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Abdulrahman. Actually, to follow up on Dr. Hind's comments regarding the marine biodiversity and the marine species, actually, usually what happens is that the regulatory frameworks that we develop on EAD level are actually cascaded down from federal regulatory frameworks, whether it is policies and regulations or regulations. On UAE level, actually, the Ministry of Climate Change and Environment endorsed in 2021 what we call the UAE General Environmental Policy. This policy actually tackles different environmental themes, including the marine environment. So on EAD level, when it comes to Abu Dhabi Emirate, EAD, let's say, developed some policies and regulations in this regard. One of these is what we call the marine water quality policy. You know, in the last few, let's say, two decades, the Emirate witnessed a huge environmental, economical, infrastructure, developmental projects along the coastline of Abu Dhabi. And this is where some pressures were there, either on the water quality or on the marine biodiversity. So EAD at that time, and based on the environmental data that we collect on EAD level, some indicators showed that there is like a degradation in marine water quality, and this is where EAD intervened.
Mm-hmm.
And we start with our stakeholders in the Emirate developing this policy, marine water quality policy, that tackles discharges to the marine environment, trying to enhance the regulatory framework in general, put in place some emergency response plans for specific, let's say, leakages or discharges, spills to the marine environment, including maybe, for example, oil spills or treated sewage effluents that may accidentally happen. And also the other pillar of the policy focused more on the how to enhance public awareness, how to raise, let's say, knowledge about challenges that we are facing when it comes to marine water quality. The other part actually is maybe related more to the marine biodiversity. And this is where EAD developed and started implementing what we call the marine invasive marine species policy. And this is where we're trying to avoid having any invasive or alien species in our marine waters.
And, you know, while the UAE has also made great strides in moving towards more sustainable fishing methods, can you elaborate more on that, please?
Sure, sure. This is a good point, actually, Abdulrahman. Our fishing, let's say, tools are really traditional. They do not depend or rely on mechanical machinery or methods that may adversely affect the marine environment. So by our heritage, by our, let's say, traditions and our commons, usually fishermen utilize, let's say, environment-friendly fishing methods. However, there are still some, of course, let's say, adverse environmental impacts when it comes to fishing. And this is where EAD tries to adopt sustainable fishing, let's say, methodologies and tools. This year, we are expecting to endorse, let's say, what we call the Sustainable Fisheries Policy in Abu Dhabi Emirate, trying to enhance the fish stock and also raise awareness of the fishermen community on sustainable fishing, let's say, methodologies and utilizing more sustainable tools when it comes to fishing. Yes.
Can I stay on the theme of sustainability? And Dr. Hind, turn to you once again. So much is happening in the UAE when it comes to sustainable agriculture, food systems. The obviously, food security is high on the government's agenda. What's being encouraged in terms of nature-based solutions? You know, for example, I don't know, regenerative agriculture, the things we all read about, like, you know, urban farming that we see so much in the media, or vertical gardens, that kind of thing. What could you add to that?
When we talk about natural or NBS, which is natural-based solutions, we consider or we want to show that our ecosystems or habitats are not just there for, or when we protect them, we're not just protecting the habitat. And I'll use mangroves here as an example. So when we focus on mangroves to protect and conserve them or rehabilitate areas of mangroves, it's not just because the mangrove is important, but it's because of the ecosystem services it provides, such as it provides nurseries for fish. It's a habitat for certain species of crabs, flamingos, some birds also utilize that area. So by protecting and conserving, as well as restoring mangrove areas, we're actually restoring the whole ecosystem that follows it. When it comes to promoting sustainable measures, like you mentioned, vertical farming and so on, if we talk about the marine side, we have aquaculture farming that has been initiated by EAD as well. We have the Delma fish as an example, where we have aquaculture farms within the sea, promoting the species that are considered to be highly required by the community. And that has seen, it was launched recently, and as I can see, people are happy about it, and I can only see it moving ahead from this point.
That's brilliant. That makes me so excited about the future, and hoping that things can just become more, sustainable. So if you don't mind, I would like to kind of dig into this subject of agriculture slightly. Can we please talk soil? I heard you're an expert on the subject as well, which we're glad to have you on with us. So just to put context on this, we often take soil for granted, right? But it is so essential. We've heard that healthy soil is vital for agriculture, but also ecosystem health and even human well-being. Good soil means, a healthy population. So can you please talk us through the EAD's plan to combat soil degradation and pollution?
Yes, you're right. Soil is one of the important, environmental elements or media. And it has a vital, services to the built environment in general. Soil used to be, regulated or tackled under the terrestrial biodiversity theme. Until 2016, this is where EAD, or when EAD included soil as one of its environmental priorities in its, 5-year strategy at that time. Mm-hmm. And this is where we tackled the issue of protection of soil quality in actually a different, more modern, model or framework. Before that time, soil used to be, or contaminated soil, used to be handled or managed as hazardous waste. So once a site or soil is contaminated, simply the practice was to move this part of soil to hazardous waste dump site or landfills. This was actually the conventional, way of managing contaminated soils. However, recently, and starting 2018 actually, EAD started adopting risk-based approach. This is this approach actually is relatively new. It's been adopted in the developed countries, like in the last two decades. And this is where EAD issued the first of its kind, what we call User Guide Soil Contamination for Abu Dhabi Emirate. Such a user guide or user guides are usually, developed by really developed countries like USA, Australia, New Zealand, some of the Caribbean countries. So we can say that Abu Dhabi Emirate is among the first in the region to adopt such an approach and to develop such a user guide. And this is where soils can be assessed. If there is potential for contamination, then risks related to human health or the environment can be managed in a proper way. And by this, we, handle soil as a resource, not as a waste, as per the conventional, methods and frameworks that used to be followed or adopted previously.
Thanks, Swail. Dr. Hind, we've kind of said, I think, that it's practically impossible to cram everything under the banner of this podcast, this green vision for tomorrow's ecosystem. But what I wanted to do is to ask you, and if you'll allow me to ask you five questions and get five relatively quick fire answers from you. And I don't mean to put you on the spot.
That's fine.
But I can hear the fear. The first thing is, and I know you're the right person to answer these, is an overview of what's being done to adapt to climate change, to create a climate resilient infrastructure, and also to encourage natural climate solutions. Things like, carbon sequestration, that would be a good example,
yes.
I suppose.
So, as you mentioned, if we can start, with the carbon sequestration point, we mm-hmm. first used to just be aware or know exactly that our mangroves store carbon within their soil and calling them blue carbon ecosystems. But we've done a few, I would say, surveys on blue carbon ecosystems to understand the level of carbon or how much carbon can be stored in each of our ecosystems or habitats. So we've assessed mangroves, we've assessed seagrass, salt marshes, and we've seen the amount of carbon that it can sequester. And that, yes, will those habitats will help us combat climate change in a natural way. And so there are three things that we can do: protect, conserve, so we don't remove them, and rehabilitate, restore, and plant these habitats. There is a long-standing program when it comes to mangroves rehabilitation, I would say, and planting. And we've seen goals set by the UAE to plant mangroves. Recently, we've started a pilot program on seagrass restoration as well. There's also a program on coral restoration that started in 2021. And through that, we're not only restoring restoring corals, but we're also identifying species that are quite resilient to heat. And what we do is once we identify those are the ones we try to rescue during the winter months, so before they get any bleaching event, and store them in an offsite lab. And then after the summer passes, that's when we replant them again, or in coral habitats that are deemed degraded, I would say. So these are measures that we are taking in terms of habitat, and to ensure that our habitats that are sequestering carbon and protecting us against climate change are still there, even after our current summer events.
So that's part one of a five-pronged question here. What about moves to reduce waste towards perhaps the circular economy?
When it comes to waste, I believe, yes, of course, we all need to reduce our waste as well as recycling and avoid using single plastic. And that's maybe something Wael can also give some insight into with our plastic or single-use policies. So yes, it is vital that we as individuals are aware of the impact waste has in our environment and try to reduce or recycle as much as possible.
Part three, sustainability education in the spotlight, as it always is on this podcast. We often hear the phrase, all education is sustainable education. It's almost a mantra now. And we're seeing community-led restoration initiatives. We're seeing much more public participation. We're seeing citizen science globally and here in the UAE. You've referred to that already in this discussion. It takes work to build green, inclusive communities that offer, you know, really equitable access to nature. How do you think the UAE is doing in that regard?
When it comes to participation of the community within environmental programs, I think we are, we've started a while back and we're moving ahead in that, because we've seen us as the agency, the quality of data, the amount of passion that the community has in being involved as well as protecting. And as I mentioned, I believe that once a person has that hands-on experience, whether they were kids or adults, they would have that in the back of their mind, regardless of their work or whatever the major that they choose, they will also refer back to that moment where they helped protect and conserve. So I believe that it always starts with kids. I, for one, still remember when I was in school and I went on a field trip with the Environment Agency, actually, to Suihan, and we had a two-day camping trip, and we were introduced to all these species in the desert and how they survey them and so on. And that memory just lasted. I never knew I would end up in an environmental field, but it's always something that I referred back to when I wanted to tell people about the environment that we have from a young age. So I think these little moments from a young age, and I'm big, that's one of my big passions as well, is to encourage students and kids to just go out there, to try to expose them as much as we can to the environment. And as I mentioned, that regardless of a person's passion or what major or where they end up working, being part of the solution to the environment is everyone's responsibility.
I think that's a really good point to make. It's not necessarily being in a classroom, being taught sustainability or environmental education. It's just being in nature. And we've heard that so many times. Fourth point I wanted to put to you is we're in the tech age. It's in every area of our lives. Are there any technologies that support nature that really stand out to you? And also, what do you expect to see maybe more of technologically in the future?
I think the most advancements or help we're getting from technology during the past few years is how fast we can get to our analysis point. So conducting quick surveys by drones or planting by drones or even GIS mapping with advanced satellite imagery, for us to be able to see hands-on real-time data on what's happening in the environment without actually going to the field. Although I enjoy going to the field as much as I can, but sometimes you need that quick assessment to happen so you can take actions as quickly as it's happening. Moving on, I can't see AI, which is something I have to mention, being incorporated into our surveys, into our assessments. And I feel it's all, like I mentioned, to first make assessments quicker, and second, to maybe access sites where sometimes it might take us a longer time to go by boat or so on. So it's just that quick data analysis is what's key, I believe, moving forward.
The final point, quickfire topic number five, what's happening to ensure further global collaboration so that we do have this shared green future?
Well, I would say it's not something new that we do. We've always been in contact and we have MOUs and we've signed agreements with international bodies in terms of, for example, conservation of migratory species. We're always conducting assessments on a regional level as well. So there's always that conversation that we have, whether it was within the region or on a global stage, where we not only showcase what we've been doing, but we also learn from what others have been doing. Although, like I mentioned, our region might be a bit different in terms of temperature and salinity, so adjustments are necessary, but we always learn, especially recently now when we're talking about advancements in technology and AI, that's where we're benefiting most and are trying to apply it here as well.
Dr. Hinn, that was a great summary. And it gives you so much appreciation for the efforts that are happening. And so you know, thank you for sharing that with us. If you don't mind, we'll just pivot quickly to Wael. And I would like to ask you about your thoughts on the overall on how we best highlight the importance of maintaining ecosystems for ecological, economic, and cultural sustainability.
Yeah. If you allow me, Abdulrahman, I would like to go back to the waste management topic that Dr. Hind has just highlighted briefly on it. Actually, let's say one of the most important approaches when protecting ecosystems is to try to reducing waste emissions, discharges that are being released to the ambient environment. And this is where EAD also is tackling the issue of waste management, waste generation in general. EAD currently is in the final stages of adopting a new strategy, actually, what we call the Integrated Waste Management Strategy for Abu Dhabi Emirate 2041. And this is where EAD, together with the Tadweer Group and, of course, other governmental entities and strategic partners in the Emirate, are trying to, enhancing the management practices of generated wastes. Currently, the generation rate of waste is a little bit high in the Emirate. So we're trying to reduce generated wastes. So our target by 2035 is to have a generation waste rate of 1 kilogram per capita per day. So this is one of the main targets of our new strategy. Another, target or goal is that we're going to divert waste from landfills or dump sites to the best. This means that we're going the emirate is going to invest more on sustainable management practices, trying to promote principles of reuse, recycling of wastes, and this is where some, waste infrastructures, waste management infrastructures are going to be like established, maybe what we call MRF, material recovery facilities. This is where recyclable items can be, let's say, collected, reused, or recycled, trying to avoid the conventional dumping to the landfills or to the dump sites, let's say.
Dr. Hind, can I come back to you? And this is something I think that we often talk about on this podcast, and I think it's worth reinforcing that it's the responsibility is to all of us, isn't it? It's for all of us to get involved, for all of us to make the effort. We can talk and use long words and buzz phrases and everything else, but for ecosystem restoration to really offer a powerful nature-based solution, if we want to mitigate climate change and the effects of climate change, the simple fact is we all have to get involved. We all have to do our bit.
I always say that when it comes to protecting the environment, for us to really make a difference with the young people is to actually make them understand why. Why do we want to protect it? Why do we actually need the environment? How is the environment supporting us? And why we actually need the environment more than it needs us? And when we start with that, whether it was kids in, let's say, the youngest of age to adults, when they actually make that connection or understand the services that the environment offers us, or the kind of even lifestyle. I'm going out to the parks and enjoying a clean air and clean water. That's all part of us protecting the environment. So it all starts from that point, from the point of knowledge and the right knowledge being given and accessible to the community, regardless of age, is where we start. And that's where we make the initial difference, I would say. Then we can move on to the actual practices, volunteering, community engagement, and citizen sciences, where they can have that hands-on experiences that we've talked about. But I honestly believe that it starts with giving them the right information, and that's where the spark can be initiated.
Of course, and this is a great way to put it, because that's where all sort of action begins. It begins from your own experiences, being educated in the right way and learning about what's happening around you. Would you like to add anything to that specifically in terms of biodiversity conservation and general environmental policy? Additionally, and most importantly, perhaps, how do we keep the message fresh?
This is actually more to the awareness campaigns that EAD conduct on a regular basis. Actually, we have at EAD a specialized team where they develop their communication and awareness plans on annual basis, and also in different environmental fields. Right, for example, they have specific activities that target different audiences, actually, or different groups, particularly the local community. For example, when it comes to marine water quality and or how we protect the marine environment. Same with the waste. As I mentioned, yani, we really need to enhance our practices when it comes to waste management, particularly municipal solid waste. So this is how EAD actually transfer this messages or these messages to the community or the target groups, target audience. Definitely we utilize the social media. Currently, social media is really very effective, where you can deliver or achieve or reach out to different groups. In addition to the social media, we also utilize some other tactics, including awareness sessions, cleanup campaigns, meetings, whether it is virtual, in-person meetings with different target groups, trying to foster some environmental concepts or messages to the local community.
Yeah, I mean, that's where people's eyes are, you know, on social media. That's where they, you know, get most of the information nowadays, including news, etc. But meeting people where they are is the best way to proceed and to share this knowledge. And I'm sure a lot of people appreciate it, you know. Finally, I'd like to kind of delve in on the last question here for this episode. I'd like to ask Dr. Hind, from your perspective, can you put into words the importance of the steps the UAE as a country is taking to ensure ecosystem restoration efforts and to provide a healthy environment for future generations?
That's a very hard question. I mean, it's everything. But I would want to say the steps that the UAE is taking towards conserving our environment, I believe all starts from being in the field itself and from collecting the necessary data as a first point, let's say. And that's where we can understand, if we go back to our earlier surveys, we can see the trend in our data and see the trend, whether it's going up or it's going down, and the reasons behind each. And we either continue in the same way or we identify a threat or something that's impacting our environment. So everything I believe that is being done has a scientific basis. And every step, every policy, every regulation, every adaptation plan, let's say, is all done due to the knowledge that we have been collecting for the past two decades. So why we're doing this? It's because we want to ensure that everything we see now, every luxury, I would say, when it comes to the environment and the clean waters and the clean airs and the beautiful species that we have in our seas and in our terrestrial side, will continue to flourish in our ecosystems for generations to come. One, for them to enjoy it as much as we do, and two, for these ecosystems to provide as much as it has already provided for us as humans for the coming generations.
Inshallah, we hope
Inshallah.
So.
Both of our guests today are from the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi, or EAD. Dr. Hind Al-Amri is the Acting Section Head for Marine Biodiversity Assessment and Conservation, and while Suleiman is a specialist in environmental policies and regulations at EAD. Dr. Hind, thank you so much for taking time to join us.
Of course, thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
And Wael, thank you also for being here with us on the episode today.
It's my pleasure, actually. Thanks a lot for giving us this opportunity. Sure.
Thank you both. What a discussion, Tim, huh? There's so much to think about here. I'm not sure where to start. So I think I'll let you do that.
I had the feeling you might do that. Do you know, what I thought was interesting was we had kind of the regulatory side almost, the policy side with Wael, and then the almost, I don't want to say more human side, but the more, you know, this is for future generations side with Dr. Hind, which I thought was a nice balance. But it was really interesting when, you know, I said to her, you know, what about the five main principles? Talk me through the sustainability aspects. And she talked about, you know, seagrass. She talked about carbon sequestration. She talked about technology. It's all of these really big ideas. And you have to kind of try and encapsulate everything. It's such a huge topic, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, it is indeed. And, you know, what I took away from this is the moment she was speaking about her childhood and the fact that she got to experience going to this school trip for a couple of days in the desert. I just went back to that as a young version of myself. Yeah. And I thought, you know what, it would have been so awesome to just be there in the middle of the desert in Suwayhan or whatever and just absorb all this nature away from the city. And I don't know, I felt like this is such an underrated aspect of environmental education.
It is. And it's interesting that she talked about that because it took me back. I mean, I'm a lot older than Dr. Hind, a little bit older than you. I have to admit that. But I go back to times when I was a kid in primary school and we would be taken to, you know, like a small farm for a day or something. And the memory of that is so strong. And the importance of that is still so strong to me today. you know, all these years later. I think you make a really good point there. That really stood out.
Indeed. Fascinating stuff and great conversations. A green vision for tomorrow's ecosystem.
Thanks once again to our guest experts. There's one more thing, by the way. Don't forget, it's the International Union for Conservation of Nature World Conservation Congress in Abu Dhabi in October. Just a swift reminder there.
It is. The IUCN is based in Switzerland, but it's convening here in the UAE for the first time ever. It's going to be a great event. Okay, that's it for today's episode. I am Abdulrahman Al-Zahabi.
And I'm Tim Elliott. Join us again next time for more in Season 5 of the Environment Agency Abu Dhabi's Naturally Educated.